Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 138 in this series entitled Anatomy of the Soul and Its Relationship with the Body, Chapter 51. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, during the winter of 57-62.
Welcome back after the little Hanukkah break. This evening we will begin, with Hashem's help, the 51st chapter of the Tanya, getting closer to its culmination. But the Alter Rebbe made sure to throw us a hydrogen bomb in the last three chapters of Tanya, making them not easy to run through and cover swiftly. Chapter 51 actually begins the last unit of the first section of Tanya. The first section of the Tanya, known as Likutei Amarim, consists of 53 chapters. In the Hasidic Chabad tradition, they correspond to the 53 chapters of the Bible, of the Torah, of the five books, the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. And generally speaking, or more specifically speaking, these 53 chapters can be divided into several units. The first unit, it pervades chapters 1 through 17. The second unit begins with chapter 18 through 25. The third unit is 26 through 34. The fourth unit is 35 through chapters 40. The fifth unit is chapters 41 through chapter 50. And finally, the sixth and final culminating unit of the first section of Tanya are the last three chapters, 51 through 53. In chapter 51... I mean, the structure of the Tanya, when you finish it, it's just magnificent. It's extraordinary to review and to see how the Alter Rebbe constructed meticulously his edifice of Chabad Chassidus. I mean, it's just magnificent. So in 51, you know, because when you're in the middle of it, you don't always recognize the nuanced connections and the subtle build-up and the continuum and the chain of one chapter evolving into the next, into the next, into the next. But that is always the great advantage of finishing a book, that one has the unique opportunity of what we call hindsight. And hindsight, you see a lot of things that you can't see when the event unfolds before you without looking back at it. So in 51, The Alter Rebbe returns to one of the central themes of the Tanya, upon which he based a large part of the book, and that is the theme of La'asoysoy, the culminating word in Moshe Rabbeinu's statement to Parshas Nitzavim, Kikarev Elecha Adover Miyayid, Beficha Ubilvavcha La'asoysoy. This pasuk, this verse, is the mission statement of the entire Tanya. The Alter Rebbe gave us his mission statement of what inspired him to write the book and the title page of the book. And basically the meaning of the pasuk, as the Alter Rebbe sees it, is that Moshe Rabbeinu, the one who gave us Yiddishkeit, the one who molded the Jewish people for eternity, tells his people that Yiddishkeit, Torah, spirituality, godliness, is something that is karev eilecha ma'ayid, that is extremely accessible to you, which for the Alter Rebbe means to every single Jew, notwithstanding his spiritual or psychological condition and station level. It is accessible to you. What elements of Yiddishkeit? Beficha, those elements of Yiddishkeit that relate to your mouth, they are very accessible to you. Furthermore, ubelvavcha, even those elements of Yiddishkeit that are connected to your heart, which means its emotional experience, its internal experiences are extremely accessible to you. And finally, la'asoysoy, the components of Yiddishkeit that deal and relate to your action, to your acts, to your activities, they are also extremely accessible to you. Now, generally speaking, one can say that in the first half of Tanya, I mean the first half till chapter 35, the Alter Rebbe more or less speaks about the Bilavavcha element of Yiddishkeit. How every single Jew can discover or acquire spirituality and godliness and claim it as his or hers. It can become really yours. From chapter 35, he begins discussing also the theme of La'asoysoy, and this is how he begins Perek Lamed Hei. He quotes a story in Zohar Parshas Balak, and it's this story that he elaborates upon beginning with chapter 35, and here he comes back to it. Let's see. Perek Nun Aleph, page 141, Daf Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph. Vihine now, L'tois v'zbir, Loshin Hayinuka Deleil, to explain even better and deeper the words of the Yinuka, the words of the child mentioned previously. Now, which words is he referring to? Again, in chapter 35, he quoted the Zohar in Parshas Balak, where the Zohar tells the following story. The two great sages, Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yehuda, were on a journey. They arrived to a town named Kfar Sichnin, the town of Sichnin. That was the name of the city, of the little town, of the little city. In Kfar Sichnin, there lived one of the great Tanoic sages, Rabbi Hamnuna Sava, the elder of Hamnuna, Rabbi Hamnuna the old one, or Rabbi Hamnuna the grandfather. He was a contemporary of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the author of the most fundamental Kabbalistic text, the Book of Splendor, the Zohar. But he has already passed on by then, Rabbi Hamnuna. So Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yehuda stayed at his home where his wife lived. Sefer HaBoyer is attributed to the Tanna Reb Nechunya ben Hakana, not to Reb Hamnuna Sava. Reb Hamnuna Sava and his wife had a little child who was orphaned from his father after the death of Reb Hamnuna. That day, he comes home from school, and he sees the two sages, Reb Yitzchak and Reb Yehuda. So his mother tells him, and she says, Ingala, little boy, go over to these two great men and receive a blessing from them. You know, you tell your boy, wow, here are two great tzaddikim, this is an opportunity. Get a blessing, a bracha from them. So he began approaching them. And as he became closer, as he was coming closer, the Zohar says he moved back. And he actually went away from them. And he tells his mother, I will not come close to them, because both of them did not read Kriya Shema this morning. And I have learnt that a Jew doesn't read the Shema at a particular day, he's excommunicated from heaven during the entire day. So I do not want to have a relationship with two people who have been excommunicated today in heaven. So the two sages were actually blown away. And they told him, they said, it's true, we didn't read Shema today, but we'll explain to you why. This morning, our entire morning was devoted to collect funds for a groom and a bride who wanted to enter into the covenant of marriage, but they were both very poor and they didn't have the money. So we went to collect the money to be able to arrange for them a wedding and the basic necessities they should be able to begin their life together. And we know that ha'isik b'mitzvah poter min ha'mitzvah, if you're occupied by one mitzvah, you're exempt from the other mitzvahs. And since we were totally indulged in this mitzvah, so we were exempt from Shema. But then they asked him, they said, B'ri b'meyadaita, son, how did you know? And he said, B'reicha d'luvu shaychu, yadine kad krivna l'gabaychu. From the aroma of your garments, I have recognized this truth when I approached you. From the aroma of your garments. In any case, they sat down for a meal. They, the widow of Reb Hamnuna, the lad's mother, and the lad. He is the Yanuka that Alter Rebbe is referring to. The lad, the child, this is the child of Reb Hamnuna Sov. The Zohar says, during the meal, this child began revealing very profound, esoteric dimensions of the Torah. And Rabbi Yehuda tells Rabbi Yitzchak, in the middle of the meal, he says, K'didamilon hayinuke lav barnashu. If you ask my opinion, this child is not a human being. And the depth, the profundity of his wisdom was mind-staggering, it was soul-staggering. As the day goes on, he continues, this Yanuka, this child, shares with them a very special insight, which forms the foundation of tens of chapters in the first section of Tanya. And the Zohar Parshas Balak records most of the things the child told him during the meal and during the day following the meal. The Kabbalists explain how does a child know so much. I mean, here you're dealing with a soul that was already once in the world and has reached very, very high levels, and he had to come back to fix something. So it was already a very, very mature soul. It was an old soul that has had already a lot of experiences and a lot of knowledge previously. But in any case, what is relevant to us is that Alter Rebbe brings one of the ideas that the Yanuka, the child, told. And that is, he quotes the Pasuk, which says in Kehelet, Shlomo HaMelech says in Ecclesiastics, in Kehelet, Perek Beis, Pasuk Yudalet, Hechachem Einav Bereishiv Haksil B'choy Shecheilech. The wise man has his eyes in his head, where a fool walks in darkness. So the Yanuka, the lad, asks them, and what, tell me, not a wise man doesn't have his eyes in his head. Where are our eyes if not in the head? Where does a fool man have his eyes? In his abdomen, in his heart, in his legs? What's the meaning of this Pasuk? So he brings another pasuk also from Kehelet, chapter 9. B'chalei ziyu b'godecha levonim v'shemen areishcha lo yechsar. At all times shall your clothes be white, and oil should not be lacking on your head. What does this mean? So the child explained to them that above the head of every human being hovers the Shechina, the divine presence. This is called a flame. It's the flame, the fire of divinity that hovers above our head. And that's the reason for the halacha, the Zohar says, that we shouldn't walk 4 cubits, which is around 6 feet, begilu roish, with an exposed head. The yarmulke, the kippah, inculcates within the Jew a sense of reverence and surrender to the flame that's above me. The yarmulke is like the flame of the Shechina that is above us, above our heads all over the time. And that's what the yarmulke, or the covering, reflects, it represents. Now, a flame needs a wick and it needs oil, as we just experienced during Hanukkah. The wick, said the Yanuka, is the body. That is the wick. But a wick without oil cannot allow the flame to endure. You need oil. So what's the oil? So the Yenuka told a Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yehuda that the oil that sustains the flame of the Shechina above the Jew's head, that is Inun Uvda'on Tavon. The oil consists of Maisim Tovim, good deeds, mitzvahs, Uvda'on, deeds, Tavon, which are good, holy, sacred, spiritual deeds. And this is the meaning, HaChacham Einav Bereishai. The wise man has his eyes in his head. It doesn't mean literally that his physical eyes are situated in his head. Everybody's eyes are situated not in the leg and not in the arms, but in the head. What it means is that a wise man's eyes, his focus, his concentration, his mission, his goal, is focused on that which is above his head, which means he or she secures that which is above the head always is sustained by the appropriate wick and the proper amount of oil. Versus other people can ignore the flame and allow it to become extinguished or allow it to dissipate and so on and so forth. HaChachem Einav Bereishai, his eyes, his focus is on that which is above his head. So the Alter Rebbe asked his monumental question in chapter 35. It would seem more appropriate for the Yenuka, for the lad to say, the body is the wick, and what is the oil? The soul. The soul, the divine consciousness, the spiritual transcendental consciousness within the Jew, that is the oil that fuels the wick and sustains the flame. But the lad says no, he doesn't even mention that. Uvdan tavon. It's the maisim tovim, it's the good deeds. That is what constitutes the oil. The Alter Rebbe said, why wouldn't the soul suffice? It's a chelik alakamimal. It's a piece of divinity. It's a spark of Hashem. So that would seem as the best container for the flame of the Shekhinah. What do you need more than a neshama, than a chelik alakamimal to serve as the container and the vessel and the seat that allows the Shekhinah to hover above the person's head? But the Yenuka says no. Uvdan tavon, good deeds. So the Alter Rebbe explained to us an extraordinarily revolutionary concept. And it's this concept that he continues to dwell upon in chapter 51. But in order to understand the sequence, let me review briefly what he said in 35. Because this was dealt with in 35 and then 36 and 37. Those three chapters. And to understand Alter Rebbe's explanation, I think, and we can understand it better, and we discussed it then more at length, of an example for this in a relationship in this world. We're dealing here with the fact that you should be able to have a relationship with the Shekhinah, with the Divine Presence. Now, in our own world, when you have a lover and a beloved one, through which means does a lover become connected to a beloved one in a more powerful way? When I feel a feeling, an emotion of love towards a beloved one, or when I do something for the beloved one? What do you think is a more powerful connection? When I actually feel even an explosive emotion of love towards a particular human being, or when that particular human being asks me, please go buy me a bottle of milk in the grocery store, and I go and I schlep out to the grocery store and I buy a bottle of milk and I bring it back. Which one? At first glance, in most people's natural feeling, of course, there's a much deeper connection when there's a feeling of love. You go do something for somebody, big deal. You may not be in the mood of it. You may be resentful. You may even hate the person for all practical purposes. You're doing it because you have no choice. You're coerced. You just want to get rid of it. It's nothing. It's dry. It's garnished. A feeling of love is magical, romantic, heavenly, splendorous. I mean, that's a relationship. Your heart is on fire with a burning passion and desire towards another human being. Now I feel connected. But if I'm tired and I'm exhausted and you say, I need this, and I go out and I do it, it's a nice thing to do, it's a noble thing to do, but it's devoid of the romantic magic. But the truth is, as the Alter Rebbe made clear in chapter 35, that's not true. Right. And the reason is because the deepest love, besides what you're saying, that very often love could be a form of infatuation. Even when you're dealing with a genuine love, the emotion of love, as much as it is about the beloved one, it is about the one who loves. The feeling of love doesn't only benefit the beloved one. It benefits the one who loves. It's extremely enjoyable. It's gewaldic. It's beautiful. I benefit from it. My I is equally important in the emotion of love as the one whom I love. Because if my I is insignificant and valueless, then the love is really valueless. The entire experience of love is that I'm crazy about this person. I am captivated by this human being. I don't lose myself in the process. I am valuable. I benefit from it. I enjoy it. It's great to love for the lover, not only for the beloved one. Love is not self-sacrifice. It's not self-suspension. It's not self-abnegation. If there's no I, so who's loving? However, when the person, the beloved one, asks me to do something for them, and I go ahead and do it, now I am doing something for that person, exclusively for that person. It may be that I gain nothing from it. In fact, it may be that it actually constitutes a loss of my time, a loss of my energy, a loss of my interest. So as dry as it may be, here I am suspending myself for the sake of the other human being. In love, I am not suspending myself. I am enhancing myself by means of the other human being. I mean, to give a remote example, Rabbi Saul Salanter, they say, once saw a Yid who was eating chicken with a lot of passion, like some Jews during the Ne'ilah of Yom Kippur are very passionate. That's how he was eating his chicken. So Rabbi Saul says, you know, what's the gewald? Why are you so excited? He says, Rebbe, what should I do? But I love the chicken. I just love it. He says, one second, let's not exaggerate. If you would have been in love with this chicken, you wouldn't have had it taken to the sheichet, be slaughtered, be plucked, be salted, be rinsed, be broiled and cooked, and then converted into your blood, into your body. That's how you treat somebody you love. You take him or her to the sheikhet, you have them killed, you have them salted, you have them rinsed, you have them plucked, and then you have them converted into your own blood. You don't love the chicken. You love yourself. And the you likes the taste of the chicken. But the point is, even on a much more refined level, in all forms of love, there is an enhancement of the I. The I becomes richer. The I becomes more enjoyable. The I becomes deeper. The I feels deeper because it has a relationship with this. But when I do something for the beloved one, in action, because of its dryness, there's no me. It may be that I'm not interested in that. But the person wants that. The beloved one wants that. I put myself aside for the other person. And that's what you'll see practically. And this is the mistake that many of us make. That the deepest response of love from the beloved one to us, we get not when we express emotions of affection, but when we do something for that person. And we sometimes get frustrated. I'm expressing so many emotions, and why don't I feel the reciprocity? Because the other person feels that it's equally about you, if not 80% about you. You're actually in the mood of expressing emotions. Great, what do you want from me? When you actually go ahead and you do something for the other person, something that they need, this is their soul that you're connecting to. Love is something that your soul feels. Now when you're doing something for them, you're connecting to something from their world. This, everybody sees it practically. This evokes a whole different type of response. And the Alter Rebbe says, the same is in our relationship with Hashem. What creates a deeper bond between the Jew and Hashem? A Jew who's exploding in love towards spirituality and godliness. A Jew who's romantically infatuated by heaven. Or a Jew who goes and does a mitzvah. So the Alter Rebbe says it's the same idea. I may love Hashem profoundly, infinitely, endlessly, but the I is extremely present in that experience. A mitzvah is Hashem's identity. A mitzvah, a Torah, that's Hashem's wisdom, it's Hashem's will. It's His world, that's Him. When I do that, I'm connecting to Him. I'm doing something that's lovable to Hashem. It's dear to Hashem, it's precious to Hashem. I'm connecting to Him. I'm not finding how He enriches me. Now, this is true about every relationship. But when it comes to godliness, there's something much deeper. And that is that the true definition of godliness is that it's the only reality. Unlike a human relationship. And thus, through love, you could never experience the authentic, pure reality of godliness, because love, by definition, underscores the fact that there is a lover. In English, there is no sentence, love you, without an I. And if there is an I, in the presence of I, even a spiritual I, cannot express itself, the true unity of Hashem, that Einoid Mulvade, He is alone and there's none else beside Him. Zok de Yenuke, this is what the lad was telling Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yehuda and Zoyar. This is what he was saying. You want the Shechina, you have to have oil. And you know what oil is? Uvdan tov. Mitzvahs, not soul. The soul is a chelek l'kamim mal. The soul is spiritual. The soul is godly. The soul gravitates with love and awe. But the very fact that there's identity doesn't allow for the true unity, for the true intimate reality of Hashem to be present. However, a mitzvah, which is Hashem's will, a mitzvah is not my experience. A mitzvah is Hashem's property, so to speak. A mitzvah, that is the oil that allows the Shechina, the divine reality, to hover above you at every moment of your life. This is the reason, by the way, the Alter Rebbe keeps on quoting in Tanya, a few times, the term yenuka. Even here, he doesn't even say what. He says, Lashon ha-yenuka de-le'el. Why is it so important to emphasize that it was said by a lad? So the Rebbe once explained, because this really conveys the whole idea. Mitzvahs relative to love is like a child relative to an adult. It's childish. A mitzvah. Spiritual experience. Now you're talking. This is a mature relationship with Hashem. A mitzvah is hollow. It's dry. It's childlike. It's technical. It took the yenuka. It took the lad to appreciate that it is in the simple mitzvah relationship that the Jew touches the deepest essence of reality. The mitzvah. Whether it's the tefillin, the mezuzah, the Shabbos, or the Torah as well. But then the Alter Rebbe takes it a step further. The Yenuka said uvdan tavon, which means good deeds. Everything said above, you could have the Shechina dwelling above you through learning Torah, or through mitzvahs that are performed through thought or speech. Like saying Shema is not a deed, it's a mitzvah. But the Yenuka says uvdan tavon, which is even more childish than mitzvahs performed in thought and speech. Mitzvahs performed in thought and speech are intellectual. Mitzvahs performed by arms and legs are extremely technical and physical. And that's the oil. Alter Rebbe explained at the end of 35 and 36 and 37, and these are really some of the most revolutionary chapters in Tanya, if you could say that. That being that these are spiritual mitzvahs, they get you in touch with the intimacy of the divine presence. But which element of the Jew becomes connected with the intimacy of the divine presence? The spiritual part of the Jew. Because Torah and mitzvahs of thought or speech occupy primarily our spiritual components. But the ultimate purpose of creation, he established in chapter 36, was that Hashem wanted that the Jewish people should transform the physical world, the mundane world, the materialistic, opaque, egocentric, animalistic world, into an abode in where Hashem's presence should dwell, and therefore the objective of creation could only get accomplished through Dan Tov and through the physical mitzvahs, which allows the Shechina to become connected with the physical, animalistic parts of the human soul, the animal soul, and with the physical components of the Jewish body, and through that, with the physical components of our materialistic world. And this was 36 and 37, and he explains how that produces the whole Mashiach world, as discussed there at length. If so, what do you need Ava and Yira? The question is, if this is the case, what do you need spirituality in the Jewish life? The technocrats and Yiddish guys got it right. Yeah. What do you need passion? What do you need inspiration? What do you need love? What do you need awe? Physical mitzvahs, technical mitzvahs, concrete mitzvahs. So from 38 through 50, the Alter Rebbe goes to the other extreme. That mitzvah, love and awe are needed because they provide wings. They provide wings for the bird to soar upward. And he explained this at length. He explained the need for awe, the need for love. And then he went on to discuss many gradations and levels in awe, many gradations and level in love, until the climax in chapter 50, where he discussed the deepest level of love, what he called golden love, Levite love, the love of Klois HaNefesh, the love of Ratzi, where your soul is mamish, eager to expire from the body and melt away in Hashem's all-pervading presence. And even in that chapter, in 50, he concluded that the ultimate purpose of this love is shuv, to return back and to remember that notwithstanding my craving to transcend, I need to return back to my body and reclaim my physical life, because this was the objective of the entire creation of the universe. So now we see from 35 through 50 was mamish one instruction that Alter Rebbe continued chapter by chapter. He finishes chapter 50 discussing the highest level of love, the golden love, the Levium love. Now he goes to 51. And 51, 52, 53, he drives home this ultimate point of the yenuka, of the lad, la seisei, that ultimately life from a Torah perspective, the real meaning of life is la seisei. Action, deeds of Dan Tov and mitzvah, spiritual deeds in your daily life. And this is the culminating theme of the first section of Tanya. Okay, so let's begin inside again. To explain even better and deeper. The word used by the yenuka, by the lad, discussed above in 35... Now, the Alter Rebbe doesn't say that there's any question. If he would ask a question, that would require more explanation. But he doesn't raise any questions. But there are a few questions that will become clearer later in the answer. And one of them is not to get into the details. One of them is, generally speaking, in Kabbalah, in the entire literature of Kabbalah, where all physical substances are always traced back to their spiritual origin in the spheres, in the divine emanations, Shemen is always associated with Chachma. The quality of Chachma, the sphere, the attribute of Chachma, of conception, of wisdom, is embodied in the physical substance of oil because of different properties existing in oil, which we will discuss. It's interesting to note that, like all themes in Kabbalah and Chassidus, this is also explicitly stated in Gemara, or almost explicitly stated in Gemara. The Gemara in Menachos, Daf Pehei Amid Beis, quotes the pasuk in Shmuel Beis Perik Yudalid, Vayishlach Yoyev Tekoya Vayikach Misham Isha Chachama, discussing the tragic episode between David HaMelech and his son Avshalom. Part of that dramatic story, Yoyev, David HaMelech's general, sends an emissary to the city Tekoya, and they bring from there a wise woman. Why did he send his agent to the city of Tekoya to bring a wise woman from there? Since the members of the city of Tekoya, had a lot of oil, a lot of olive oil, and they consumed a lot of it. So chachma metzuyah behen. So therefore, chachma, the quality of wisdom, was a very common feature among the residents of Tekoya. So when he was looking for a wise, shrewd, and a smart woman, he sent his agent to Tekoya. But in any case, in Kabbalah, Shemin is associated with chachma. And yet here, quite on the contrary, the Yenuka associates Shemin with Uvdon Tovon, with deeds, which denote physicality, concrete, earthly deeds, not wisdom and not conception. And this also will be understood through the Alter Rebbe's explanation. Okay, so to understand all of this better, so now he goes over to another subject, and he will not return to this until chapter 53. So let's leave it on the side for a while and recall, remember, restore it in your minds, and we'll get back to it in a gimel. Now he begins to discuss another subject, which, as we will see, is very, very complicated. Sarech levar tchila, we first have to explain another subject. Lahavin ktsas. We must understand a little bit inyan hashra'as hashchina, the concept in Torah known as hashra'as hashchina, the dwelling of the shchina of the divine presence, shahayse shoyde bebeis kodesh hakadoshim, which dwelt in the Holy of Holies. We know that in Torah, the holiest location in the world was the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, the innermost chamber, first in the tabernacle in the desert, and then in the Beis HaMikdash in the temple in Yerushalayim. And the reason for its uniqueness is because there, it was Hashra'as HaShchina. It is said that the Shechina dwelt there more than in any other place in the world, to the extent that the high priest himself could only enter into that chamber once a year on the holiest day of the year. Yom Kippur, the holiest Jew, the Kohen Gadol, could enter into the holiest place. V'chein kol mokim Hashra'as HaShchina. Likewise, any other place where we refer to Hashra'as HaShchina, this is a place where the Shechina dwells. We have to understand Ma'inyane. What does this concept mean? What is it meant when we say that a particular location, or for that matter, a particular person, is distinguished as being a place where the divine presence dwells rather than elsewhere? What's the question? Halay malay chalaretz kvoydi. In the words of the prophet Yeshaya, chapter 6, we say each morning, malay chalaretz kvoydi. The entire earth, the entire world is full of his glory. Or in the statement of the Tikkuni Zayar, v'leis hasar ponimine, there is no place that is void of him. So how can we come and say, here is a location where the Shechina dwells. This is a particular place where there is a special presence of the divinity. This is apparently mamish, a contradiction to the axiom in the Jewish faith that leis hasar ponimine, there's no place devoid of him. Every place is the Holy of Holies, and the Holy of Holies is like every other location. Hashem is here and not there. So what does it mean when we say the Shechina dwells here? And the same question can be applied, as I mentioned, to human beings. What does it mean? This person is a person in whom the Shechina dwells more than any other human being. This great tzaddik, this great prophet, whatever you're talking about. Moshe Rabbeinu versus a regular Jew. In every speck of dust, in every grazing animal, in every snowflake, in every drop of rain. It reminds me, the grandson of Rabbi Akiva Eger, Rabbi Label Eger, became a Kotzker Chassid. And his father was quite aggravated by this. So he went to visit Kotzk to try to see, you know, where his son ended up. And so there's a lot of stories of what occurred during that visit. We won't get into them. It's very interesting stories that are peculiar, that are unique for the Kotzker style and the behavioral patterns of Kotzker Chassidim, which, as we know, was a unique movement even among Chassidus itself during the times of the Kotzker Rebbe. The Kotzker Rebbe passed away in 1859, I believe, Tafresh Yutes. He was a contemporary of the Tzemach Tzedek, the grandson of the Alter Rebbe. In any case, so they say that he came there Erev Yom Kippur. So after Mincha, so he came into shul after Mincha, and he asked one of the Chassidim, he said, "When is Kol Nidre? You know, when do you daven Kol Nidre here?" So the Chassid looks at him and he says, "Ah, Ma'ir Vachta Zeger." You know, Ma'ariv will be 8 o'clock. And he heard it. What do you mean Ma'ariv? It's like, really? You know, another Ma'ariv. It's Kol Nidre. He was the Yom Kippur, and then he came back. He came back before the Pesach season. Comes the Erev Pesach, and he says, you know, when is the Seder? When will the Kotzker Rebbe do the Seder? So the Chassid says, Avetcher de Achtazeger. Dinner will be served at 8 o'clock. So now he couldn't contain himself anymore. He said, I don't understand. Erev Yom Kippur, you call Kol Nidre is Ma'ariv, and a Seder is supper. So he says, our Rebbe taught us, as Yeder Ma'ariv is Kol Nidre, and Yeder Vetcher is a Seder. Our Rebbe taught us that every Ma'ariv is Kol Nidre, and every dinner is a Seder, is a Pesach Seder. You know, and that's really, you know, Leis Asar Ponimine. In the ultimate scheme of things, a Ma'ariv of a Sunday evening, eighth day of Tevis, is Kol Nidre. It's Kol Nidre. And a supper is a Seder. But the Alter Rebbe says, if so, why do we talk in Yiddishkeit? We do talk about differentiations, and we do talk about unique moments, and unique locations, and unique events, and unique human beings. How do you reconcile these two truths? This is the subject the Alter Rebbe will discuss in the following two chapters in depth. Achainin. The key to understanding the subject will be found by the following preface. The Pasuk tells us, "Umipsari echze eleka," and from my flesh I perceive God. You know where this Pasuk is? Right. Our Tanakh expert in Job, in Iyav, chapter 19, Pasuk 26. The Pasuk describes the response of Iyav to his friend Bildad. Bildad was one of Job's, one of Iyav's friends that came to comfort him after horrific misfortune struck Iyav, his family, and his body. And Iyav responds to Bildad and he says, "Va'achar oiri nikfuzois umipsari echze leka." Which literally means, according to Rashi, according to the Ibn Ezra, the Ibn Ezra, that Iyav was saying to him, after my skin was stricken, I became so ill. Achar oiri nikfu zois, they pierced me. My friends, instead of comforting me, they pierced me with reproof, with rebuke. They made it even worse. Umipsari echzelika. And I, from my flesh, I perceive the judgment and the punishment coming from Hashem. You know, I don't have to perceive the judgment of Hashem or this punishment by looking at the world. I look at my own flesh. I look at my body. I look at what happened to me. Mipsari, I could see the punishments from Hashem. So why do you come to rebuke me and strike me even further, build it rather than comforting me? That's the literal interpretation. Not quite an inspiring statement to explain why Mipsari Echza Laka is one of the most famous verses in the literature of Chassidus. Now, just to appreciate how the Alter Rebbe explains it, let me tell you what the Malbim says. The Malbim explains it in a different way. He says a very interesting idea. He believes, I mean, this is consistent with his entire commentary on Iyav, that Iyav believed, and I mention this because it's relevant to the subject theme of this chapter, which basically deals with the question of what is a soul and how does a soul work. I guess after 50 chapters, Alter Rebbe decided he's going to explain to us what a soul is. We're talking about souls, a tale of two souls. But what in the world is this soul anyway? Have you ever seen a soul? I mean, what is the soul? So over here, finally, in 51, he takes on the very anatomy, the chemistry of what a soul is. So the Malbim says that Iyav believed that the entire definition of the soul is that it invigorates the body, which means void of a body, there is no soul. The definition of the soul for Iyav was that it is an engine of the body. It's the motor of the body. And without the body, there is no motor. And therefore, Iyav says, "Umipsari echze leka." A question, not like Rashi. "Umipsari echze leka." "Umipsari echze leka." From my flesh, viewing my body, Will I ever be able to perceive Hashem? Which means, since my body was destroyed, Rachmana Litzlan, I was struck so severely, my flesh basically, virtually is not in existence. How will I be able to perceive God? Without a body, there's no soul. So mipsari, from flesh like mine, which is virtually in a state of decadence, which is at the verge of extinction, how will I ever be able to appreciate, to see, to perceive godliness? Without a body, there's nothing else. Mipsari, echzalaka, there's no ability to perceive godliness, to understand anything, because without a body, there's no soul. Now here, we will appreciate the Alter Rebbe's contribution, and again, the contribution of Chassidus, how it really invigorates every pasuk and every idea with a new type of energy. The Alter Rebbe says, and it's obvious, what does he mean there? Mipsari echza leka. Mipsari echza leka. Eiv is not questioning, he's stating, from my flesh will I perceive godliness. From the flesh itself, you can experience godliness. Which means, the reality of a human being, including his physical flesh, tissue, bones, limbs and organs, including his psychological identity, including his spiritual identity. A deep analysis upon the entity of the person is a path through which you can discover godliness. What the Alter Rebbe is saying is, if you'll search yourself deeply, you will find the Almighty there. Or as he puts it elsewhere, sometimes even by searching your ego, if you search your ego deep enough and earnestly enough and long enough, you will find Hashem there. Mipsari, one of the tools to discover godliness is by looking at your own flesh. So Eiv apparently is saying, if so, the flesh is not evil. The flesh is not destructive. Why does the flesh have to be destroyed? The flesh itself can be converted into a vessel for godliness. That's what Eiv is saying. Mipsari echza leka, so why does the flesh have to be struck when the flesh is not evil? The flesh can be an instrument through which you experience godliness. One of the great chassidim of the Alter Rebbe, the Mittler Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, Rebbe Hillel Paritcher, once said, he said, till I became a chassid, I looked at my body with scorn. I hated it and I despised it. Because I knew all my evil comes from my body. Everything bad about me is basically associated with my body. I would always think, if I could just get rid of this nevela, if I could just get rid of this abominable poison. And he says, the first time I heard the pshat of the Alter Rebbe, as for my flesh, from my body itself, I can experience godliness. The body is an instrument through which you can perceive the truths of godliness. I started to cherish my body. The Alter Rebbe also once said, and apparently this is an alternative interpretation for Eiv, Alter Rebbe once said, "Mipsari echza leka." He said in a nigin, "Mipsari echza leka." V'acher oiri nikfuzay. So mipsari echza leka. After my skin was stricken, acher oiri nikfuzay. After my skin was stricken, then mipsari echza leka. So Alter Rebbe said, "Medav shayir in dem basar bizas durich dem v'menzena leka," which is a brilliant interpretation in the pasuk. It's not so easy to look at your body and experience godliness through it. Medav shayin and dembasa. The body has to be disciplined and often suppressed. And sometimes the body has to say no to the body. Medav shayin and dembasa. Shayin and dembasa is you have to rub away layer after layer after layer. It's not like I'll sit down. I could sit down by my dinner table, eat two pieces of steak, a bowl of rice, a plate of potatoes, and then have a couple of cones of ice cream, and say, mipsari echza leka, from my fats I will experience a leka. Eiv is saying, no. Acher oiri nikvuzes. The Alter Rebbe didn't say it at the beginning of the pasuk, but I just realized that's what the Alter Rebbe apparently meant. Acher oiri nikvuzes, then mipsari echza leka. After the skin is pierced, after you refine your body, you deal with your body, you sublimate your body. You don't allow your body just to go haywire and eat whatever it wants. You have to work and work and work with your physical self. Then you can discover the light in the body itself. But it requires a process of deep, deep self-discipline, as he discussed in chapter 42, Yigiyas Bas. So this is what Alter Rebbe is saying, and therefore, what's the context? What's the relevance here? The relevance here is, he asked a question about the relationship of the divine presence in the world. So the Alter Rebbe is going to say that via reflecting upon the soul of a person and its relationship to the body, we'll understand something about the soul of the world, Hashem, and His relationship with the body of the world. Mipsari, from understanding the relationship of my soul to my body, I will be able to understand something about the relationship from the cosmic soul, from Hashem's reality, to the body of the world, which is the physical world. Shekemoi, shenishma sa'adam. Just as the human soul pervades all 248 organs of the body, from head to foot, which means from the highest of part of the body, from the highest part of the body to the lowest part of the body,